And right now I'm going to jump over to PMC Live. I have the guests in the studio with me. KFSK News and the Petersburg Medical Center have teamed up for this PMC Live show, which we air the first Thursday of every month. And it focuses on what's happening over at the Petersburg Medical Center. Today I'm joined in the studio by Medical Center CEO Phil Hofstetter, along with Liz Bacom, who's the Infection Control Director, and Bailey Kubernick, a speech therapist. Yes. How's it going, everyone?
Great.
Good.
Great. We wanted to kind of jump in here and get you on. Sometimes we wait until right after the newscast, but some of you are on your lunch break because you're doing hearing tests over at the schools, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So, one of the services we're doing is my background's in audiology, so. I've done a number of hearing screenings in the past, and we've partnered with the school and just to provide some services. And I've roped in Liz Bacom, our lab imaging quality and infection control person, multiple hats.
Yes.
And also Bailey, our speech language pathologist, to help with the hearing screenings.
Okay, so I also want to talk about the community cafe, but since we're on the subject of the hearing screenings, this is something that PMC is providing over at the schools today, and why?
Yeah, that's a good question. As an audiologist, school-aged hearing loss can be prevalent, sometimes up to 20 to 40% in kids, and it goes undetected or unknown because you can't see it. And it could be things like ear infections, fluid in the middle ear, ear pathology, or hearing loss in general. So there are a number of different things. So it's in order for kids to learn, they need to hear properly. And so it's a way, we have these really nice tools that we can screen hearing very quickly and effectively. And you don't have to be an audiologist to do them, which is really nice. So they're very quick. We're working with the special ed department to help funnel and work through with the kids, and we're trying to get all the kids at the elementary school.
Wow, all the kids. Is that a where they hear a beep and raise their hand kind of test?
It's automated these days, so we have something called the otoacoustic emission screener. You can do the hearing test where you raise your hand, but those take a little bit longer, and the variability is a little bit higher for those because you have to rely on somebody raising their hand. This one, somebody just has to sit there. We put a little tip in the ear. They hear some sounds, and a unit actually takes measurements out of the ear canal, and it's either a pass or a refer. And it's a very nice unit. They use it for infants as well, for when infants are born, to see if they can hear. Very fast, quick. It's extremely easy. You could teach someone to do it in like 10 minutes. It's very nice.
What do you mean measurements in the ear?
Okay, so well, this is my fun hat.
Sorry,
with the audiology.
I don't want to get too much in the weeds,
great.
I'm like, what? How do you know that somebody's hearing by taking measurements in their ear?
Right, so the units, what they do is they found that the inner ear, the hearing mechanism, is not a passive system. It's active. So when it hears two frequencies going into the ear at a certain level, the hearing nerve makes a sound, a third sound that comes out of the ear and it propagates out of the ear canal. And there's a sensitive microphone in the probe tip that picks up that sound, believe it or not. And they don't. It doesn't have to be in a soundproof room either, which is kind of amazing. It'll pick up that emission that comes out of the ear canal, and they can check up to five frequencies. Maybe we screen two to five frequencies, just similar like a hearing test, but the emission is a response. And if the emission is there, the sensitivity is really good, that they have good hearing. If you get a refer, it doesn't always mean that they have abnormal hearing or what level it is. So there are some limits to the unit. But if they pass, then you know they have decent hearing or good hearing. And if they refer, I'm going to do sort of a follow-up screen with the headset, like you were saying, with the raising of the hand, and doing that next week.
Oh, wow. So you'll be back at the grade school.
Yeah.
For those that are kind of flagged as...
Correct, yeah. And just it's all courtesy, so we're just doing it as a courtesy for the school.
Wow. Well, So you're a speech pathologist, Bailey.
Yes.
And speech, does that go along with hearing?
Oh, 110%.
So if a child has hearing loss, they're at risk for also developing speech or language or struggling socially in school, just because it's so important for kids to be able to hear and understand what's going on, especially in the critical period from birth to three, where kids are learning language for the first time. That's where language and speech growth happens the most. So it's really important. Audiology and speech language pathology are very connected in that way. It's not just for our younger kids, though. It's really important for patients across the entire spectrum to have their hearing checked, because if you're an older adult and you don't get checked for hearing, you're also at risk for Phil, if you want to take over, I know.
Yeah, you know, with hearing loss in adults is certainly a whole topic, but hearing loss kind of sneaks up on adults, because over time through noise exposure, you know, typically is what we see, or genetics, you know, you start losing just a little bit of the high frequencies. Typically is sort of the standard, especially with noise exposure, and. You know, it's one of the, you know, the hearing nerve is not regenerative. So you can't, once the cells, you know, degrade or deteriorate, that's it. As you get older, it accumulates. So you can have sort of this progressive high frequency loss. And, you know, a lot of times if you're married, you'll come across a situation where, like, my spouse is not hearing me. They're not paying attention to me. And often it could be hearing loss, early hearing loss, because the high frequency hearing loss, which is where it usually goes, it can be very small. But you just start missing those sounds, those speech sounds, the S sounds, the TH sounds. And in the English language, that holds you all the information. So you hear the vowel, you could say ran, and they could think Sam, man, can. What is it? You're trying to fill in the blank based on it, and you can misunderstand what's being said, especially if there's noise in the background, or if people turn away from you, or if they're talking from the other room. Very common things. So hearing and communicating are extremely important. And they do have, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bailey, but as you get older, there are studies, isolation and not socializing as you get older really impact health and well-being in the elderly. So it's extremely important to hear. It's a sense, so you want to be able to hear, communicate, and socialize.
Yeah, there was a survey done of 4,000 individuals where there were higher rates of depression, anxiety, and psychosocial issues among adults who had hearing loss. There's also a high correlation with dementia and hearing loss. I believe at a third of a risk higher, or for mild, and then for moderate, you're even at a higher risk. And I think it's like five times likely to get dementia if you have a severe hearing loss. Can't remember the numbers, but there's a high correlation. So it's just really important to get your hearing checked.
So for listeners out there, whether they're parents or care providers of young people or adults who recognize that they're having issues, or their loved one is having issues with hearing, or they're just curious about it, you know, what's the next step with PMC? What we were talking about today is that you're at the grade school,
right. But
can they get their hearing checked at PMC, and how far does that go?
So very much in the early stages at PMC, it develops. As an audiologist, I'm also administrator, so it's not like I can open up and see patients every single day. The first step is screening the kids and getting some screening program out there. And then I can see the follow-up and the referral for those kids. I intend on starting a little bit on doing more outreach with adults as well, and doing hearing screenings. Northland Audiology is a private practice out of Juneau. They do come down to Petersburg every 5 weeks. And I met with the audiologist there. They're wonderful. And they help with hearing aids and hearing aid fittings. So I'd like to work with them together, so not competing, and just try to fill the gap as much as possible for audiology needs. It's certainly a service line in our first community cafe that was identified as a need. And so I'm certainly trying to do my best to fill that and start that program at PMC as well.
So the community cafe that you're mentioning, that's kind of a public meeting where PMC is meeting with people, residents of Petersburg, and discussing what the future of healthcare looks like here?
Yeah, it's a range of topics. The community cafe is an idea where we don't want to just operate in a vacuum, so to speak. It's a community hospital, and it's important that we talk about health issues and health topics. And providing a cafe is really the community's opportunity to provide direct feedback on that topic that we may present. And each cafe, we've had two now, we ask for topics for the future cafe. So the first one, we talked about service lines, and we asked for recommendations. We asked for what's one of the important service lines and services that PMC are absolutely necessary, and then what would they like to see? And audiology is certainly one of those that we would like to see grow. Technology and telehealth was another one that was identified as a topic for discussion, which is what we geared on this last one earlier this week as a topic for discussion. And we could probably maybe segue and talk about that a little bit if you want to.
When you say telehealth, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Liz is sitting here. She's ready to talk on this one. Only because telehealth, you wonder what does that have to do with imaging and lab? And surprisingly, PMC has established telehealth systems in Petersburg for many years. And Liz, why don't you explain a little bit about telehealth relative to imaging?
Sure. Well, actually, the first telehealth we did here that I'm aware of is EKGs. We do EKGs here, and the EKGs are transmitted electronically to Virginia Mason Cardiology Department for interpretation, and then they are sent back to us within a matter of days, and if we need a stat read, we can get a stat read. So the EKGs have been going back and forth like that for more than 25 years. About 15 years ago, we started looking at how imaging could be enhanced, because right now, at that point, we were actually using film that was chemically processed, and the images were shipped via Goldstreak or U.S. Mail to a radiologist in Juneau. And as the technology improved, we were able to electronically convert these images. The films were still processed by wet chemistry, and they were scanned into a big image scanner and then electronically uploaded and transferred via a what's called a picture archival system, and it's called PACS. And the radiologist could then look at those from a distance without having to have those images mailed. And then about 2007, 2008, we went computer radiography, which is the x-rays were taken and electronically converted to a digital format and uploaded, and that even speeded things up more quickly because scanning, every time you modify an image or scan an image, you lose quality, and so that improved the quality of the imaging drastically and allowed a radiologist in Oregon to take a look at images and have a report within an hour when necessary. And so our most recent advancement in imaging has been digital radiography, which is, it's similar to computer radiography. It's actually quicker, and the image quality is superior, and the amount of radiation that a patient is exposed to in an x-ray is almost half because of the technology. So what we have now is a fully digital imaging department.
So when you're hearing from residents in the community cafe about telehealth, is it that they would like more services or quicker test results or something like that?
Yeah. So the idea with the cafe was to discuss the topic of telehealth, and it's one of those concepts that appears futuristic or innovative, and I think it's important to recognize that we've already established some elements of telehealth. But more importantly, describing what it is, tele is just distance and health, just bringing health to a distance and getting a higher quality of, information. In this case, would be a radiologist reading an x-ray and back to in a very quick manner. So it's improving access using technology. So it's a tool, And what I'd what I wanted with the cafe is to provide an idea of what telehealth is, what are some of the models that are out there, and what could Petersburg want to see with telehealth. There's, and technology, the way it is now, is so many possibilities you can utilize. We had all of our physicians on a computer screen, and in the cafe they were able to go to that station after our presentation and talk and have an opportunity to talk to the Dr. Tosillo, Dr. Hyde, Dr. Hess, who were not there in the room. We had, you know, Dr. Hess was in Anchorage, and Dr. Hyde was at her house, and Dr. Tosillo, you know, he came to the first one, but then he also went home afterwards, and he was available online as well. And then we also are rolling out telepsychiatry at the end of the month, so we had the telepsychiatrist available as well to talk. And they were all kind of on at the same time. I mean, it's not totally seamless. There was a glitch or two. But generally speaking, the technology is available. And, you know, is that something that Petersburg would want to see in other kinds of specialists? Because you can't just fly a specialist all into Petersburg. What can we do to provide services? And where should we kind of head with it? And what do people want to see? Do you want to have access to your physician? Do you want to come to the clinic and we could set up the telehealth for a specialist? You know, those are all different kinds of models to access care. And it's getting the conversation started and that the technology is here and that we could actually build out something that's very meaningful.
So maybe that could provide more services for people in Petersburg where they're not having to fly to Juneau or Seattle for specialists. They could be right here and get some services.
Yeah, not just specialists outside, but also access to existing services in Petersburg, maybe quicker, more improved. Maybe, you know, there are some appointments where that are just follow-up appointments. Maybe you don't necessarily need to see in person and you have to wait a long time. Maybe those would be more appropriate. We could just do video, you know, consults.
So like a two-way video,
sure,
Skyping
yeah.
or FaceTime type of
More secure. We talked about security. FaceTime, you know, is actually a good example where security breaches were prevalent. We have a secure system called Zoom. It's HIPAA compliant, meaning it's protected. It's patient protected. So we want to make sure we're utilizing systems that are protected. We don't want to use systems like Skype or FaceTime, risking breach. We still have to follow compliance and within healthcare and establish those. But yeah, nothing's really off the table with technology. The idea is to really establish good protocols and models to be able to develop those at PMC and what's appropriate and what do people want to see.
Did you have anything to add, Liz, from the community cafe?
I thought it was really well attended with people who were engaged in what we are trying to do. So I'm hoping that they will go out and talk about what they learned. The opportunity of having a choice of whether you want to fly and spend $1,000 or more to see a follow-up appointment down in Seattle, for example, if that could be done here locally with that doctor, that would be great. I think our barriers are going to be financial and not our ability to provide, but how do we get reimbursed? How does the physician get reimbursed down there? Will insurance join us in this project or are they going to be a roadblock? So
yeah, the technology is there, but then how all of the billing happens and all of that is playing catch up kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's different ways to, there's different models. Some insurances will pay for that. There's different models out there where you could pay maybe a lower cost. And then if you do have to come in, you know, it's applied to your copay, you know, stuff like that. What's really nice is that, again, this is something that we're starting and the community can provide input on these concepts so that I can develop that. I can develop the idea that the community wants, you know, and the cost is certainly something that we would want to build into that in some way that's favorable to the community and to the providers, you know, obtaining those or providing those services.
Yeah, we listed about a dozen different specialties, mm-hmm. and there was strong interest in just about everything. So there's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, it was wonderful. We also had a friend of mine who I've worked in telehealth for many years as an audiologist. We did something called Store and Forward, where we stored images and we pushed them to the ENT specialist, and they consulted on them very rapidly, and we were able to get turnaround times of 1 to 2 hours. And that ENT was also on the video. We had him on the community cafe through video. He was based out of Anchorage. You know, there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of different models out there. We can just create innovative ideas that benefit the community and the facility for growth and service lines.
Now, I know, kind of jumping topics just a little bit, mm-hmm. Maybe you talked about it at the Community Cafe, but PMC received a grant. Was it from the Denali Commission?
We've received two grants.
Okay.
One was a grant with the state of Alaska for telehealth application, actually to help support some of these models and develop them. And we had the director of rural health at that community cafe just a couple of days ago. She flew down and attended. And, you know, so that's one grant we received.
How much do you know how much that was?
That I believe was $67,000 towards developing some policies around the model. The other grant we received was the Denali Commission a grant, and that's specifically for master planning towards a replacement facility or the aging facility. What are the sort of the next steps in that? And that was very exciting. That was over $200,000 we can use to obtain specialists like a structural engineer, a group to help look at master planning, market line analysis, a full depth capacity analysis, those kinds of things that really you have to go into a lot of detail to really understand what we can potentially do with a new facility and not just, build a brand new huge facility. You know, what makes sense for Petersburg given those studies, and those need to be done and build off of the ones that have been done previously. I feel really fortunate to be able to have PMC as a recipient to that award, and we'll have more information, and we certainly want to involve the community in those conversations as we have those studies done and develop that.
Do those studies, is that going to take years, or no, do we have any timeline?
It's actually very, very quick. We have to develop RFP with all those all that involved, and Denali Commission has very structured and standard processes for that. Their program, I have asked for technical assistance to help with that, and they're going to help me develop some of those RFPs. And we have about, I think, till November or so. It's a very shortened timeline, and it is the timeline is mapped out pretty in detail. You know, it's approximate, but we have a roadmap for that to finish that study and close it out by the end of this year.
Wow. You'll probably get a lot of information back on kind of which direction to go.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, there's still a lot of unanswered questions relative to the facility. So having those answered and then being able to build off of that information for next steps is really important.
Because at this point, we don't exactly know still. Is it? Do you know if the answer is to build a new one or to redo the one you have?
Here's what I can tell you. The facility as it stands is aging, and there's a lot of risk for points of failure. A structural engineering analysis will help us decide, can we actually renovate some parts of the facility? And that hasn't been done yet. And then how can we build? Can we build here? Can we build up? You know, where is the best location? Let's look at, what would it mean if we moved? You know, what's going to happen with the old? You know, those are questions that we can all ask ourselves. But what do we have? Do we have a professional analysis of that? And what does that mean for the community? I don't think the community has that yet. There's a lot of work that's been done. And all we just need to add these steps to it and answer those questions legitimately and then get the community input and buy-in to be able to move towards the next step. You know, we're all in this together. I mean, you know, we need a health facility one way or the other. If you're going to have it as a community, it's kind of like a school. So we need to really look at what's possible.
Any thoughts on that, Liz or Bailey?
We want feedback from the community. What do they want? What do they want to see? And what kind of services do they want in this community for healthcare? We've gotten some feedback, so it's a start.
It's very important to look at the service lines ahead of time because they all mean space. You know, so we have to decide. You know, is MRI possible? Is, you know, what does the therapies program look like? If we're going to add audiology, is what other services are even possible? But we have to do that now, so that, because you can't do it later. It's not, you know, you don't want to add on building space. You know, we want to be able to look at what's there right now and look at space allocation, look at innovative ways that we can maybe utilize that space and not go huge, but go smart. You know, what's a smart way to design something? I have my own opinion and input based on having gone through this before. But really it's about the community. It is a community hospital. It's about what, you know, we want to see, you know, for our long-term care residents. What should that look like for our long-term, those are residents that live there. We want a nice space for that.
And where do you work, Bailey, as a speech therapist in terms of, you know, I'm picturing we're talking about the building space and space of different departments.
Right now I work in a hallway, so it'd be great to have a space to work with patients, especially when we're crammed into one section. Recently, we just started a new swallowing program too, and it'd just be nice to have a little bit of extra space.
I agree. Okay, so in the future, ideally, would speech pathology, or as a speech therapist, would you be in a therapy area, like with the physical therapist and occupational therapist, or in the clinic?
Yeah, honestly, it'd just be nice to have a room. I'm not
anywhere
asking for much. Yeah,
anywhere. Okay.
Yeah.
One of the things that's happening right now at the facility in preparation for all this is we call it a space committee, which is kind of funny, but identifying areas that existing space, looking at workflows that we can even do now before we even think about a new facility. So there actually is some available space that we can potentially use, and so we can get Bailey out of the hallway, you know. But yeah, it's a great example of how, you know, what are the services that we have as we grow and we're ready beyond capacity.
Yeah, well, physical therapy started out 25 years ago with one full-time physical therapist and one part-time. That was it in the space that they're in now. So we have three full-time PTs, an OT.
Yeah.
RT.
We've expanded, so I'm the first full-time speech language pathologist to work at PMC, and Tara is our new OT in the building, and we have Caitlin, Brady, Ellie, Marnie. we're all working together, yeah, trying to get things going, so it'd be great to find a collaborative space too as well. I would love it. I know we were looking for a room for OT and PT and ST to all collaborate, because that is a huge growth for patients who are receiving all therapies, and it just brings a dynamic aspect to rehab, which is really enjoyable.
Yes.
We gotta get back to screenings.
You do have to get back. Thank you so much for joining us for PMC Live. You do have to go do those hearing screenings over at the school. So we'll talk to you again next month.
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah.